Chapter 20.
I said, "Do you want some coffee?" Spence asked, almost shouting.
Tully finally looked up from the 6 stasis tubes in the cradle on the workbench.
"Sorry," he said blankly.
Spence was amused, but no less exasperated. Tully's depth of concentration made him great at research, but sometimes hard to work with.
"Last time, do you want some coffee? I'm going to the lounge with the better machine."
Tully hesitated for so long that Spence was afraid he'd forgotten the question.
"No,"
he said finally, turning back to the tubes.
"Thanks."
Spence decided to bring him a cup anyway. He'd probably change his mind when he smelled hers. Instead of leaving, though, she lingered beside him the way she did on those mornings when he was likely to go back to sleep between one sock and the next.
"Hey, did maintenance ever cure your pressure differential problem?"
Tully shook his head slowly.
"They said it was just a transitory glitch."
"Meaning they didn't feel like working for a living, huh?"
She chuckled sympathetically. Getting maintenance to make a call could be harder than getting an audience with the Pope, the old pre-schism Pope.
"It straightened itself out," he said distantly, "so I guess they were right."
He was back down the rabbit hole with tube number 6, and Spence left him to it. Tully Charles A. sat with his elbows on the lab table and his chin cupped in his hands, gazing at the alien tissue growing in the nutrient mix. Each stasis tube was 20 centimeters long, with a diameter of 6 centimeters, big enough that he could see the contents easily, small enough not to take up too much room on the workbench. Of the 6, half of the growths were embryos, while the other 3 were egg-shaped. The eggs would grow up to hatch something he was calling a remote ovipositor, which implanted an alien larva in the nearest available life form. For the unlucky recipient, gestation was brief, and birth was fatal. But there was still no answer to the perennial question, which came first, the alien or the egg? Sighing, he took a light pen from his pocket and backlit the egg in tube number 6. Sure enough, there was a shadow in the translucent area at the larger end.
"Hey, little guy," Tully said softly. "How you doing in there? Nutrient solution agreeing with you? Guess so. We're looking lots bigger today, aren't we?"
"You bet. Terrific. Just abso-fucking-lutely wonderful.
By the end of the week, we'll have to move you to a bigger condo. The week after that, you'll be beating up cancer cells for their lunch money. Then you'll get out the shotgun,"
the lab doors whispered open. Was Spence back already? He hoped she'd ignore him and brought him a coffee anyway.
"Communing with nature, Tully Charles A."
His heart sank. It was the lady spook from Weyland-Yutani. Someone had said Rossetti called her weaponized Barbie. Tully couldn't imagine why she was there. She didn't have any coffee.
"Where's Dr. Trent?"
she said breezily and looked around.
"At lunch?"
It was Tully's standard answer. He had a 50-50 chance of being right, and it usually made the person who'd asked go away. Instead of leaving, however, the spook swanned over to the workbench and stood too close to him. Tully drew back momentarily at a loss before inspiration struck.
"You're not wearing a badge."
He tapped the ID clipped to his lab coat.
"The white strip registers contamination, turns red if you've been exposed to a pathogen. Come back later, after you get yours."
Unperturbed, she peered into tube number 6.
"So, how's our little friend?"
"Friends,"
Tully corrected her. He stood up and moved a few steps away, repositioning the cradle of stasis tubes with one hand and dragging the stool with the other.
"Our little friends, plural. And they're growing."
The woman grabbed the stool from him, sat down, and pulled the cradle closer to herself. Tully had a sudden premonition that this wasn't going to end well.
"Get me hard copy data for the past 6 hours," she said,
the fake warmth gone from her tone.
"Sorry, no."
Tully moved to the computer console on the desk behind her.
"You'll have to ask Dr. Trent. Did I mention she's at lunch?"
The woman swiveled around to look at him.
"I don't think you understand the situation, technician Tully, Charles A., so let me break it down for you."
She got off the stool to stand too close to him again.
"You're going to—" Tully heard a hiss from the workbench. Weaponized Barbie missed it because she was running her mouth, but she heard the loud crack that followed.
Oh, Jesus, he said, looking at the fine spray of nutrient coming out of the hairline fissure in tube number 6.
Tube number 2 was trembling. He took a step toward the workbench just as both tubes exploded. Nutrient and stasis tube fragments blew into Tully's face, and he fell backward, landing on something hard and lumpy. The alarm went off, a harsh rhythmic buzz that kept time with flashing red lights in the ceiling. Wiping nutrient out of his eyes with his sleeves, he realized he'd landed right on top of weaponized Barbie, and she wasn't happy about it. He rolled off her, struggled to his knees, and reached out blindly for something he could use to pull himself upright. His fingers closed on a desk drawer handle, and he managed to get all the way into a crouch just as the woman leaned her full weight on his back. His feet skidded out from under him, and they both went down in a pool of nutrient, this time with her on top of him. Tully shoved her away and tried grabbing the edge of the desktop to pull himself up, but his wet hands were too slippery, and he went down again on his front. He felt the woman clutching at his legs and kicked out at her hands. Breathless and bruised, he raised his head and found the egg from tube number 6 sitting only centimeters from the end of his nose. It was definitely bigger than it had been before Spook Barbie had barged in uninvited, which made this fuck-up her fault.
Okay,
he whispered, or thought he did. He couldn't hear anything but that damned buzzer.
Carefully, he reached up and felt around on the desktop, hoping he really had seen a pair of tongs in a tray that Spence hadn't put away yet.
He could have cried with relief if that awful woman hadn't been there. Holding the tray close to his chest, he got to his knees. Behind him, he heard weaponized Barbie trying to stand up. She'd fall on her ass again, of course, and Tully hoped with all his heart she'd fall the other way. She didn't, but by some miracle, Tully avoided falling on the egg. He heaved her off again and moved closer to the egg, tongs ready. A ripple went through its surface, and four tiny flaps at the smaller end folded back. He froze, unable to imagine what could possibly hatch from it, but all he saw was a dark sparkle, a little cloud that was gone as quickly as it had appeared. With a desperate, now-or-never feeling, Tully used the tongs and managed to grab it up without crushing it. A speaker in the ceiling directly over his head crackled suddenly, and despite the deafening buzzer, he heard Spence's voice.
Tully! God damn it, Tully! What the fuck happened in there? Are you okay?
Deacon Tam!
He shouted, hoping she could hear him. He glanced at his badge. The white strip was now the deep red of arterial blood.
We need decontamination! Get them down here, now!
Weaponized Barbie's hand landed heavily on his shoulder as she fell down again.
You might as well stay down, he told her. Deacon Tam's sending a team.
She glared at him as if she thought he was lying. He didn't say anything else. He knew what was coming next, and she was really going to hate it. Of course, if she'd listened to him about the badge, this could all have been avoided. Her jerking the cradle around on the workbench had probably fucked everything up. You had to handle things carefully in the lab, a lesson she was about to learn the hard way, which, now that Tully thought of it, was probably the only way she'd ever learned anything. Standing under the hard sprays of near-scalding water from multiple nozzles, and the even harder scrubbing by three orderlies in protective suits, Tully caught an occasional glimpse through billows of steam of the spook undergoing the same treatment in the stall opposite. He wasn't trying to, but in Deacon Tam, modesty got scrubbed off along with the outer layers of your skin. It wasn't pleasant or easy, but at least he had known what to expect. Wells hadn't. And like all first-timers, she couldn't help resisting, pulling away simply by reflex, which meant the orderlies had to manhandle her to get the job done. For a moment, he actually felt sorry for her. Then they hit him with the disinfectant again, and he forgot all about her. The damned stuff was so strong it stung even if you hadn't been scoured with wire brushes. It was like getting sandpapered with red-hot chili peppers. Later, as they sat in the recovery chamber in balm-lined pajamas, Tully almost told her what Spence had said after an accident had sent the whole staff to Deacon Tam en masse.
Look at it this way. We won't have to exfoliate for years.
He turned to her and saw she was glowering at him like it really was all his fault.
Nah,